welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast for Thursday, November 16th, 2021, otherwise known as National Fast Food Day.
Oh,
that's a good one.
What was the last fast food that you had? And what was the fast food that you wish that last fast food was?
If In-N-Out counts as fast food, then it's, I guess, the answer to both for me. Does it count?
That means you're living life the right way. Yeah, you're living right if that can be the answer. Both.
That was Sunday night dinner.
Chris is not a man of compromise.
That's
right. He knows what he wants. It's consistent. And he executes on that.
I guess so,
for me,
yeah.
It was In-N-Out as well. Normally, like, fast food is when I'm in an airport and, you know, got to grab something. But yeah. In-N-Out and In-N-Out.
Nice. It had to be like Del Taco for me. I love crunchy tacos. That's go-to drive-through item.
What do you get? The Del Taco?
No, the bigger one. I just get basic crunchy tacos. No tomatoes, even. I'm so basic, man.
Just the 59-cent lettuce, cheese, meat.
Yep. And I'm a plain and dry cheeseburger guy, you know?
Oh, you are? You're just no lettuce, no tomato on there?
I'll do lettuce.
Okay.
Tomatoes unnecessary.
Man, we're learning a lot about Mike here.
I know, but it is what it is. What are you guys working on? It's been a little while since we've talked, so I know we've got projects to kind of catch everybody up on, I'm sure.
Right, well, I got a long one, so I'll go last. So Chris, why don't you go?
Oh, okay.
All right, well, I don't even remember what we talked about last time we talked. So I put out that table with the floating leg thing where you balance that. I think the video maybe was not out yet, but I had definitely talked about it. Then after that, I finished building the semi-exact coffee table that I think I had talked about on here too. Kind of, I used the 16-inch legs and the 12-inch legs. So kind of did a table that's flat on the top, as all tables are, and then curves around down to the underside. So it's kind of two-tiered or whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a part of a Bad Larry, part of a really shallow Bad Larry, I guess you could call it.
That's cool. Is it bent or is it angular?
Both. It's out of plywood. So I did it very DIY, the whole project. So I printed up pages out of our printer and then put them on MDF and made my little template piece. And then I replicated that 13 times. And then I had to cut like 54 little blocks to space everything out. So I used circular saw, jigsaw, router, and a brad nailer and a sander.
Wow.
So those were all the tools. And it's like it would be the type of thing, like Sean made a good point. Like if you worked at a bank or something and somebody walked into your house and saw that and they're like, I didn't know you did woodworking. That's very impressive. But then I feel like if I show people me making it, they're not going to be that impressed by it, maybe. But
yeah, but it's going to be some high level DIY.
That's what it is. It's high level DIY, even though like it's not hard at all. It's actually super simple. It's just like you got to have patience and it's time consuming. Like everything takes a long time the way that I did it. So it was basically like 4 days of building of just like routing stuff for 8 hours. And then another day just brad nailing layers together for 8 hours. And then another day just sanding for 8 hours to like refine all the shapes and stuff. But it came out cool. I'm happy with it. That video will probably be out Sunday. So like a couple, well, depending on when this podcast comes out, maybe now it might already be out, or if not, it'll be out very soon.
I'm excited to see that one. I remember just talking about it a tiny bit last episode. And I remember thinking it was interesting that the basics tool chest includes a router with you. Like if there's three or four tools to get started, you're like circular saw, drills, router, and then XYZ, whatever from there.
I think the router is like a slow tool compared to other tools, but way more versatile. Like you can cut a straight line, you can cut a curved line. It leaves a good finished cut. You can do
profiles
on it.
It's just impossible to know which direction you're supposed to run it.
That's why you got to check every time. You flick it on and then flick it right off so you see what way it's going. And then you go, okay, I got it.
And then do you want it to go up or do you want it to go away?
You want it to be pushing into the cut. So that it doesn't want to pull away from you. You can do it the other way, but that's called a climb cut. And it can get pretty dangerous.
All right. You don't want to climb that mountain.
No.
So I think the router is the most versatile tool that's also a precise tool.
Yeah, it's the CNC.
Right, because most tools that are precise are not versatile, right? Like a miter saw versus, or a table saw versus a, I mean, with a table saw with a lot of attachments, you can make it versatile.
Right.
But the router is the one where it cuts really precise. You can use ball bearing attachments on like flush trim bits. And if you guide it, it'll cut it perfectly.
Mm-hmm. But it's also the power tool that's like most similar to a pencil in that it's of different value in different hands. So depending on how you're using it, like there's times where like there becomes a, you know, muscle memory or kind of like hand-eye coordination element to it. And so it can be really good or it could be really bad. It's also scary. We've talked about that before.
Yeah, routers are scary. Like, it's crazy if you were an alien, you came to Earth and you're like looking at people's tools and you would think that like a Dremel tool and a router were basically the same thing.
Yeah. And like, I was using a palm router, too, Dremel, so it's barely bigger.
They kind of are the same thing when you think about it. It's just horsepower.
Just a little spinning bit.
And they're going to be like, horsepower?
What are horses?
We use a different Martian word. I couldn't think of something that would be an alien horse.
Alien horsepower.
Alien horsepower. I don't know what the conversion rate is, but
yeah,
it's a lot.
Mm. Mike, yeah, so, what you got?
Go for it.
So I'm trying to dip into this fitness game. I know there's quite a cluster of DIY fitness projects. Ben, I think you were, if you weren't first in the game, you were paving the way. You did a 2x4 little CrossFit fold-out gym. I remember that one, and I thought that one was particularly cool.
Yeah, that's
that
my
one
favorite.
Was one, because what I thought about it being neat is it's not replicating a product. It's kind of its own thing that right. happens to be made DIY. It's kind of a prototype rather than a copy. So I thought that was really neat. And then you've also done like a 2x4 bench press.
Pull-up bar.
And then Glenn from DIY Creators recently did a DIY like full power rack or squat rack bench press combo. Very heavy duty. And it's kind of what you would get, or it's the wooden version of what you would get from Rogue Fitness. And it would cost you like $1,200. And I thought that that was a really cool project. It's bigger than what I have space for. And then I've used the bench press that you built, Ben. Me and you have used that for the past 2 years now, and it's still holding up pretty dang good, despite the fact that it's stored outside. And so my
it's
gears
almost
were
like
turning.
Some of the internet commenters were wrong.
No way. That never happens. Only experts leave comments in YouTube videos.
Yeah. It's like all the people that said that dropping the weights on the end grain like would slowly splinter the wood.
Mm-hmm.
Or that they're just... crack over time. I mean, maybe we're not lifting heavy enough weight. I mean,
yeah, they overestimated.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. It's probably because we're not lifting heavy enough weight. So anyways, I kind of, you know, was observing, and there's a lot of really good DIY fitness projects out there, but I wanted to kind of meet in the middle between what Glenn built and what you built, Ben. Something that is a combo squat rack and bench press. That way you get that 2-for-1, but something that's just pared down in comparison size-wise with what Glenn built. And so you would call this a half rack. Like if anybody wanted to Google it, it would be a half rack. And I'm building the bench along with it. Also pouring concrete weight plates.
Ooh.
And my prototype here is I want to keep it as simple as possible. That's sort of what this whole build out is all about. And so I went through Home Depot. And I found a PVC pipe. It's a 3-inch PVC that perfectly slides over an Olympic bar. So the PVC needs to stay integrated into the concrete weight. So I cut it to the same height as a 5-gallon bucket, which I'm using that as my form. And then I used a file to just gouge out some grooves. That way it wasn't a perfect cylinder anymore. That way it just had some positive stops that the concrete could mold around and lock everything in place. So I poured them. Ben, you were over the other day when we demolded them. They're surprisingly smooth. And for about 5 days now, I've been leaving them outside to continue and dry. And they just keep wicking away about 0.5 pound of water every day. And now I'm left with a 66-pound weight that I used 64 pounds of dry mix to create. So almost 1-to-1 now that it's had a full 2 weeks to cure.
Now, would you call them weight plates or would you call them weight nuggets?
Weight nuggets? I like that a ton. Yeah, maybe it's like weight stones. I don't know, but it's very Flintstones.
Yeah, they're about, what, 2/3 of a full 5-gallon Home Depot bucket?
Yeah, maybe a tiny bit more than that, but yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. Like, I'm interested to see how easy they are to get on or off the bar. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think a typical weight plate is a little bit bigger, like maybe 1/8 of an inch bigger diameter in the hole than the PVC pipe. The PVC pipe still has plenty of clearance, but the PVC pipe is also pretty slippery on the inside, so it should slide on pretty nicely. And I don't think it's going to make too much sort of rattling noise. Like, I don't think you'll need collars on these at all.
I don't think that there's enough of that wiggle room to warrant like having to use them, but for sure in the video, I'm putting them on.
Yeah.
For sure. So I got to DIY the clamps at the end somehow. No way.
Yeah. When you say nugget shaped, so it's not like plate
shaped? It's a cylinder. It's a thick cylinder. Okay. Like, it's a stack of plates more than a plate.
Like a caveman wheel?
Yeah.
Kind of aesthetic?
It's very caveman wheel.
Okay.
It will be. So the very first ones that I made, Chris, I used a 5-gallon bucket as my mold. Uh-huh. So it's literally the exact shape of a 5-gallon bucket. Like, it has that little bit of a taper. Mm-hmm. But I want to take the idea a little bit further and they'll look kind of what you said. They'll look like giant blocks of cheese, because for the amount of weight, you need more concrete than metal. So for an 80-pound or for a 45-pound weight, it's going to be twice the size.
Yo, we could use those and chain them or put them on like an axle, and we could make our own steamroller.
Actually,
that's a good idea.
I mean, practicality, low. Fun, high. I love the idea.
Steamroller coming right up.
Just start your own little like Flintstones theme restaurant or something.
Oh, and my Rockler Hobby Challenge video is out. Thanks everybody for the support on that.
Record but player. Ben,
what are you up to? You said you've got a lot to talk about. Are you about to go on a monologue?
It's not quite that, but
no, I'm kidding.
It hasn't been too much building. I got a few videos that'll be coming out this week. I did the lightweight concrete table. That's all finished. Oh, that video's out already. I'm doing that kind of CNC'd concrete modular planter, the kind of spirally circular one. And we'll probably have a couple more videos out in the next like 5 days or so. I have quite a bit of stuff shot. I haven't been making too much new stuff. I think the last time we talked, I was just about to head to Mexico City for Andrew Schultz's bachelor party. That was like 4 days and of like nonstop, like debauchery. Like, it was pretty much like the Hangover movie, but set in Mexico City. And it probably took a solid year off my life with all the kind of, you know, I don't think we got back to the hotel till like 5 a.m. was probably the earliest. It was just a lot of eating, drinking, going to random clubs, getting into almost trouble, but just absolute ton of fun. I think no one really got in cartel trouble, although there was a couple times where we were at this. Okay, so I got one story from it. You know, there's 13 of us and, you know, pretty interesting group of guys. And, you know, a couple of the guys on the trip are like really well traveled and really into like the entertainment and hospitality business. So they're always trying to work to get the group like into like the best table and the best situation. Mm-hmm. So we do this like taco crawl where we're eating like all the best street tacos in Mexico City, which was phenomenal. Not quite Del Taco level, but still pretty good. And then, so it's probably about like 1:30 a.m. and this local guy is like, hey, I'm going to get you to this like really cool club. And these clubs are like kind of underground, almost like in an abandoned building, but they're all set up really nice. And you go through these like kind of tunnels and mazes of like abandoned buildings. And then all of a sudden you're in this like kind of courtyard with like really cool lighting. And it's just like lots of people sort of partying and these like different like tables and DJs and like, you know, electronic music and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we sort of worked it out and got all the bottles and all that stuff. So we're kind of holding court at this big table. The problem is when you're sort of holding court at like a Mexico City kind of club on like a weekend night, you know, the other sort of like people that you're competing for sort of attention with of the premier service might be I don't know, have shady affiliations, I guess.
Yeah.
So this group of girls like comes over and starts talking to us because, you know, obviously we seem like the cool group of guys there. And, you know, it's fine. Nothing's really happening. Just sort of chit-chatting and all that kind of stuff. And then you see some whispering from the table next to us. And then the manager comes and goes, oh, you know, you might not want to talk to those girls. Meanwhile, at the same time, just as the guy say that, I'm like, you know, kind of looking down from my perch. I was kind of up on this like high part of like our like little cabana kind of hangout spot. And the girl reaches into her purse and just with her pointer finger, just like pulls up like a huge pile of cocaine on the end of her finger and just like shoves it up her friend's nose. And I'm like, oh, you know, we're in that kind of place. So we kind of skedaddled out of there before anything got too shady. But obviously, you know, the craziest stories have to kind of stay hidden. But Mexico City, a lot of fun, fantastic food. It actually felt more like Europe than most of the other parts of Mexico that I've been to, like really beautiful old buildings. Like the restaurant scene was incredible. And we went to like this place called Pujols, which is like was on that chef's table show, like the real kind of full fancy stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was so funny too, because it was like they send you this like prefix menu and you open it up and it's like sealed with wax and it says like $2,300 for the meal, right?
Yeah.
And I posted it on Instagram because I was just posting because like the food was really cool. And then everyone's like, you're paying $2,000. Because they use a dollar sign. Uh-huh. Like, you're paying $2,000 for a meal? And it's like, no, man. It's pesos.
It's pesos.
It's like $100.
That include horchata?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a deal right there. That's a deal.
And yeah, it was a blast. But again, took like years off my life. Got back. And then I had 2 days to prepare for a really big presentation. So I think I've kind of hinted on the podcast a few times about the hotel project, which is kind of the big back burner project that I've been working on for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. So ever since I finished the Container House, I got approached by some entrepreneurs. I partnered with my buddy Adam, and we started putting together this proposal to develop a 65-room shipping container hotel here in Joshua Tree. So that started 2 years ago. So this has been eating up probably about like a third of my time for the last 2 years has been putting all the pieces into place, raising the investment. And then for the last 18 months, we've been working with this team of engineers and architects that we hired. It's a team of about 12 people to do all of the submittals. So California, and everyone's heard me talk about how hard it was to get the shipping container permits for a single family house. Well, this is a commercially zoned piece of land. It's 12 acres. And a commercial project of this size, you have to go through CEQA, which is like the sort of full environmental process for the state of California. So we're dealing with all the stuff that I had to deal with for a house, but it's harder because it's for a bigger commercial building. Plus, we have to deal with the state on top of it with their sort of environmental constraints. But our thinking was, you know, we got land in Arizona to also do another hotel. Let's start with California. That's going to be the hardest. And it'll kind of be like when you're putting the weights on your baseball bat. You swing with the weights on, so you take them off and everything feels really light.
If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere.
The most difficult or the most tenuous part of the whole project is getting what's called a conditional use permit for the zoning. So our land is zoned commercial, but they have to approve whether or not you're going to be doing light industrial stuff, retail, warehouses, or in our case, a hotel. So it took us 18 months to put together all the documents. We spent about $300,000 to $400,000 just on engineering because you have to do geological testing. We had to hire a biologist to make sure that there was no tortoises on there. We had to hire an archaeologist to make sure that there was no Native American artifacts on the site. We had to do a traffic survey that submitted to the city to show that how our project won't contribute to massive traffic jams and all that kind of stuff. Just endless and endless things. We have to build what's called a package sewage treatment plant. So for my house, I could just do a septic. But once you're over 10,000 square feet and we're doing about 20,000 square feet total, you have to build your own sewage treatment plant. So then well, how do we do that? Who's the engineer that we hired to design this whole system? So it was a really long process. And all that money that you spend on engineering, it's not like you're buying a tangible good or service. You're spending it on consultants just to create this one presentation that you hope five strangers that have no business interaction with you say yes to it. So that's the planning commission that we had to present to.
Was that presentation, was it like a one-shot deal? Like, from this, then we're going to get our answer? Or like, how much was riding on this presentation that you had to do?
Pretty much everything, right? Because if we didn't get this, like, we could reapply again months from now, but we'd have to spend more money. And at the same time, we'd probably lose some of the confidence of our investors.
Okay.
Not to mention that once people start voting against something, then they start looking for more flaws because they don't want to be the one that let it get through the cracks when somebody else was on the record saying that this isn't an acceptable project.
And are the results immediate, or now are you waiting?
No, it was immediate.
It's like a Shark Tank panel.
Yeah. Shark Tank. Very Mr. Shark Wonderful. Tank. So I had the presentation November 2nd. And, you know, it's a public hearing. You stand up, you say the Pledge of Allegiance. Mike came and offered his support, which really appreciate that.
Always.
And, you know, you submit everything in writing first. So you submit like this, you know, 60-page report on your project. And then the city staff, they do their response with saying, you know, they go in detail of it. And then they wrote about like a 120-page report with their analysis of our proposal. Then they, you know, do a publication to the local newspapers, and they set up a hearing where you have to go in front of the public and in front of the planning commission and present. Now, we'd been doing our intel since we have a lot riding on this one meeting, and we knew that one guy was going to almost for sure vote no, and that one other guy was kind of 50-50 but leaning towards no, and that the other three were probably going to vote yes. So it wasn't like we were going in like thinking we're going to fail. We were going in thinking we're going to get this, but it could be close. And it's really important. You don't want it to be close, even if it goes your way, because you still have to go through for building permits. Now, building permits are way easier. That's more just like you keep submitting until they say yes. It's not this like one yes or no thing. And the building department is much more like you have to match this code to what you're designing. But there's also like negotiations with the city about how much roads you're going to build. So there's been a long negotiation whether we're going to build, you know, $800,000 worth of roads or $600,000 of roads. So, you know, if you have unanimous support, it kind of sends a informal message to the rest of the staff that works for the city to be like supportive of this project if all the commissioners voted yes.
That makes sense.
We knew that one guy was going to vote most likely against and another guy was kind of leaning against. So we did our presentation, and we also did our research onto what were all the hot button issues for the last 6 months that this commission had heard. And so one of the big ones was that Airbnb and short-term vacation rentals was destroying the local housing market. Because what people realize, if they own a house, they could make $3,000 a month on Airbnb versus $1,400 a month renting it to a normal person. So there's fewer houses to kind of be rented to a normal person, and everything's up on Airbnb. Right. So we kind of tailored the presentation to really fit all of the things that people had been complaining to this council for the last 6 months. Things like parking, not having dirt roads, but having really paved roads, dark sky ordinance to keep light pollution down, sound mitigation, all these things. So when I kind of got up and did my 15 to 20 minutes, every like three sentences, I was hitting on something that they had dealt with as an issue. So we were kind of like proactively addressing all their concerns as they went along. And I posted the clip on my Instagram, and the guy that was going to for sure vote against us, he's the first person to speak. And he's just like, well, to be honest, I was going to vote against this. And I wasn't just going to vote no. I was going to vote heck no and use a different word for heck. And he didn't look like a particularly friendly guy, but he was like, you know, shout out to him, because he had a thought beforehand and we were able to change his mind in the presentation. And that's a lot of people, even when they hear like a good argument, they don't let themselves be changed.
Right.
So I was just super appreciative that he was like, had a strong opinion, but was still open and minded enough to kind of hear what we were presenting. And he actually is the one that kind of initiated the positive vote, and we got it 5-0. So we're nice. Building a hotel.
Bam, bam, bam.
That's awesome.
Dude, that's so awesome. Yeah. Congratulations.
So do you even have, go for it. Mike. I was going to say, no, do you even have like a rough idea of how long, like what are we talking, 2024 or something like that?
Probably 2023. I think hopefully we'll start construction around the fall of next year.
Okay.
And construction actually will go pretty quick. We're doing prefab with the containers, so we can actually be building the rooms at the same time that we're pouring the foundations. So that's just sort of shorten those times. I also kind of stacked the deck because the public can come up and talk at the podium. And your boy Modern Builds had to show us support. So, okay, so...
Oh man, you're gonna call me out. You're gonna put me on blast.
So Rachel Metz was there, Jesse was there. They all came up and sort of just talked about, hey, we live in this area, we own land, we support this project. You know, we think that like we're too reliant on Airbnbs. There hasn't been a new hotel in 10 years. Mike gets up and is like, you know, he's doing Mike. It was almost like the same voice you use if you're doing like an ad read.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's still natural, but it's just a little bit louder and like directed at like a group of officials that were like 20 feet away.
Sure.
But he's like, can I give it two thumbs up? And he gave it two thumbs up. And then he like kind of like almost did a spin move, but then he like banged into the podium. I was like, oh, sorry.
Did he get a couple You're laughs right. at least?
Yeah. No. I'll post the clip of it. It was solid.
Yeah, post the clip. Because honestly, in the heat of the moment, I don't even remember what I looked like. But I knew I was looking like a goofball. But I got a chuckle out of like
the head
all
chick.
Of the people. Yeah. At least the head chick. I don't know about everyone else. But at least the head chick kind of gave me a chuckle. But I did such a good job delivering my lines up until I decided to maybe do finger guns. Then I thought finger guns was too much, so I reverted to a quick thumbs up instead.
Because you kind of hesitate too, like, and that's why I could tell
finger
you were like,
"Was a terrible idea." Do
thumbs up? Or is this more of a finger guns kind of?
Right now, I was thinking we just did the Pledge of Allegiance. Yeah, we just did the Pledge of Allegiance. Now is not the time to be bringing out finger guns.
It's, you know what? It's kind of like, what's Chris Pratt's character in Parks and Rec?
Oh, Andy.
It was a little bit of that vibe, like the cheerful guy in kind of like a formal situation.
Yeah, fitting for the room we were in. But that was one of the cool things too. And shout out to the power of PowerPoint. Am I right, Ben?
Yeah.
Shout out to PowerPoints. But even though you kind of stacked the deck, there were a couple of people that were local that wanted to voice concerns, and it was funny because you gave a presentation, then it was an open floor. So if you wanted to support the project, talk about it. If you had anything to say negatively towards it, now's your turn. And they just called randomly names as they were submitted. They just drew them out of a hat. And it was funny because your presentation disarmed everybody that had already submitted to go up and say something. They were like, well, I was worried about this, but I guess that's not going to be a big deal.
You've already thought of that.
Like a good presentation and... Alrighty then.
What would be the most credible naysay comment that someone would have?
So in general, people that live in areas are against outsiders coming in and doing big projects. Because one, people don't come to this area because they want to be part of rapid growth. People come to this area because they kind of want to get away from like cities. Right. So I can understand that. This is like a huge project for this area. Nothing this big and has been built here in a really long time. And so there's people that have these like quiet little houses kind of on the edge of town because we're right at the border between the national park and the town of 29 Palms. So there's two entrances to Joshua Tree National Park. The Joshua Tree one, because Joshua Tree is the actual city where I live in right now. And then 29 Palms, which is about, I don't know, Mike, 12 miles away, would you say?
Yeah, it's a 15-minute drive real quick.
And there's another entrance to the park on that side. So you can kind of take a 20-mile drive through the park and come out in either one of these two cities. So these cities are the two cities that are right at the two major entrances. So 29 Palms is a little more developer-friendly than Joshua Tree. It's also where the Marine base is and stuff like that. And they're a little bit more pro-development than Joshua Tree. But there's still people that live at the kind of edge near this kind of area, which isn't really developed, that like they just don't want to see cars on their roads and just want to be left alone. Mm-hmm. I get that, but we own the land and it's zoned for this usage. So, you know, you don't want to say tough luck. And what was so hard about this presentation is that if I'm presenting like at a university or like, you know, doing the talks at Google or one of these lectures and somebody asks me a point, all I'm defending is my ideas so I can go hard into paint. Mm-hmm. But in a public situation, you can't defend your ideas too hard. You have to defend very gently, because if you look like that you're a dick that just thinks he has all the answers, which I'm guilty of plenty of times on the internet, you don't really look like someone that people want in their community. Because it's not like anyone's going like, you know what we need? Really smart, capable people that treat everybody else like they're idiots.
No, so not quite.
It was one of the only presentations that I got nervous for, simply because I was trying to be really empathetic and not to say, here's this awesome building, check how cool it is. This is a normal building. That sucks. Ours is better. All that. Mm-hmm. We're going to do the best thing in this town. It's kind of thinking of like, here's what the town on paper says is important to them. Here's what we're trying to do. And here's some of the alignments. So one of the things that we were saying is right now along our property, there's a whole bunch of telephone poles with power lines. So we're actually paying to put those underground. So that's great for the local residents, and it's great for us because we want to have the hotel to have amazing views of the mountains, and we don't want power lines in the views. So we really tried to stack up all of those things. The other part that's really cool that we may need a little brainstorming on is right next to us is an animal shelter. It's called Palms and Paws or something like that. So we're trying to work out like some way to integrate with the animal shelter. So in all the hotel rooms, we think we're going to like hire a really good photographer to go take pictures of all the dogs that are for adoption and then put them in like picture frames in take the hotel rooms, but do them like really serious portraits.
Yeah. like a presidential portrait.
Presidential portraits, and just be like, oh, this dog's available next door for adoption, by the way.
You better hope they don't have any tortoises over there, because I'll shut you down.
I know.
How do they check for tortoises? I mean, does the guy have to just come look and see if there's any tortoises? How much of an expert do you need to be? Or do you just need to be a guy who's got the time?
You have to be some sort of like credentialed biologist in this with knowledge of this species. And he basically scours the entire site. It was an expensive report. And he's looking for tracks. Right. Mm. So he's looking like not just for a tortoise, but like has a tortoise been here? But he knows a lot about them. So he knows that if like he'll look around certain types of plants, because those would be the plants that they would eat. Mm-hmm. So and then he writes this like, you know, 20 page report indicating the probability of tortoise habitat.
Wow. What if they did find a tortoise?
Just relocate, claim it's a turtle.
Or they're just like, sorry, you've got to wait for this tortoise to die. Then you can build on this property. But so far, this is the tortoise's land.
Then there's mitigation efforts, right?
Okay.
You'd have to create alternative paths around them. You might have to redesign your site plan and stuff like that. So,
wow.
Yeah. It's a
good thing there weren't any then. That's awesome.
Yeah. No
area tortoise.
Tortoises and stuff like that. But so we still got to do, you know, construction and building permits, but it's more like the ball's in our court now. Like we're not waiting for this kind of like arbitrary decision. Now it's just like, you know, doing the work and executing on it. So we had a big celebratory dinner afterwards. We brought in like a chef and did a big meal. Yeah. Looks like we're going to be building a container hotel.
That's awesome.
That's so sick. Yeah. That's awesome.
Swimming pool. Let's go.
We're scaling up.
What's the name of your paint color?
Casual Turtle.
Casual Turtle. This could have been Costly Tortoise if there had been. Maybe that'll be my color.
Costly Tortoise. Yeah, it'll be all of green.
And on that, we'll go ahead and go to a sponsor break. Today's episode of the Modern Maker Podcast is sponsored by Skillshare, the online learning community. No matter what 2021 brings, you can spend it creating something meaningful with Skillshare's online classes, because time is what we make of it. Learn about illustration, design, photography, productivity, and more with Skillshare's online classes. With Skillshare's short classes, you can move your creative journey forward without putting life on hold, like I did when I recently took video for Instagram, tell an engaging story in less than a minute, taught by Jalice Nervez. Staying on top of my Instagram and content game is super important for myself and modern builds, so thanks Skillshare. And right now, if you follow our link, that's skillshare.com/modernmaker, our listeners get a free trial of Skillshare Premium Membership. That way you can take some classes and see what fits you best. Once again, that's skillshare.com/modernmaker, where our listeners get a free trial of Skillshare Premium Membership.
What we're working on is brought to you by SawStop. They make great table saws, they're the safest, and they're also just really great at woodworking. I have one, Chris has one, and Mike's getting one really soon. So actually, we've had a few of our listeners actually post their photos on Instagram with the SawStop that they just got. So congrats to those people. If you tag me in that, I will reshare it. So get a SawStop and hit us up.
Absolutely. And as always, we'll have links down in the show notes, so be sure to check those out. Thanks, SawStop. And while we're at it, I'd like to give a big thanks to Indeed.com for sponsoring today's episode. The key to success is finding an edge and leveraging it. If you're hiring, that edge is Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview candidates all on Indeed. With Indeed, you get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Plus, you only pay for the candidates that meet your must-have qualifications and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy. And with tools like Indeed Instant Match, you get quality candidates whose resumes match your job description immediately. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. So if you're hiring, you need Indeed. So get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/modern. Get a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/modern. Last time, that is Indeed.com/modern. Offer valid through September 30th. Terms and conditions apply. Now back to the show.
And we're back.
Yes, we are. And I am currently at Maker Ranch. I needed Ben's internet so it could so we could record a little bit easier. But while I was here, I noticed you got all this colored acrylic. I know you've been talking about it on the podcast because you want to use a laser cutter with it. I'm sold. You made a pour over coffee station and it came out really cool, man. I've seen some modern like acrylic furniture on Pinterest, and this is 1,000% down that alley. And I'm like very, very excited because I haven't seen anything DIY. I've only ever seen like very artsy gallery type furniture made out of this material.
Well, cutting acrylic with a saw is not hard, but then you spend a lot of time sanding and polishing all the edges for finishing. And right. Then if you're using like that kind of like liquid abrasive stuff, the flat surfaces will be perfectly clear. And if a little bit gets onto that and it's one of the rougher grits, in polishing the thin edges of like 1/4 inch or 1/8 inch thick plexi, you can accidentally scratch up the clear side. So then you're like undoing work as you're trying to do work, and it's a disaster. Yeah. So a laser cutter, and if you have a really good laser cutter that's dialed in to kind of cut the right thickness without overheating it and creating bubbles because it's actually like melting it too much, or underpowered, meaning that it's not cutting through in one pass and you have to do multiple passes and then the passes aren't perfect and the focus gets off and stuff like that, it can be a disaster. So I've actually got the Make Block laser. It's fantastic. You know, Glowforge had reached out a while back with just really dumb influencer marketing kind of things. Like they wanted to like they created this horrible contract that's like indentured servitude and you have to like do all this stuff. And if you don't do it in this time, then like they take the machine back and you owe them money. And which was disappointing because I saw the Glowforge kind of campaign and I was like, wow, that's an incredible piece of like, I think it was one of the biggest Kickstarter campaigns ever or crowdfunding campaigns ever at the time.
Yep.
And, you know, I'd met the founder before and he seemed like a great guy, but their marketing team was just terrible, at least in their interactions with me, and just rude, entitled. So when Make Blocks came out, and I had a full spectrum laser before, which worked well, but it was like an old model and you'd have to like set the focal length. It was just the software was like really janky. You needed like a PC to do it. It wouldn't work with a Mac. It was just all that kind of like early digital fabrication stuff that was just like right. not user friendly. So I got the Make Block one. It also has an air purifier because laser cutters, like they're cutting stuff with a laser. So if it's wood, it smells like burning wood. If it's plexiglass, it smells like burning plastic. if it's leather, it just smells like death.
Yeah.
But it has this air purifier. Then it has a hose out of the air purifier. And it's like a really heavy duty charcoal filter. The filter is like a 9-inch by 9-inch by 9-inch cube. And then all the air goes through that. Oh, it's wow. like a sack of charcoal in there. Yeah. So I got that. I got a bunch of 1/8-inch colored plexi off of Amazon. Pretty inexpensive. And the colors are like really nice. I used this kind of like grayish blue. And I really like the fluorescent green. Like it's like a, it looks like a Lego kind of fluorescent green.
Yeah. I was also checking out the colors. They've got like classic oranges, all kinds of stuff. It's neat the way whenever it's cut on the laser, maybe it's always like this, but it's much more of a deep or rich color along the edges than it is on either of the faces. Maybe that's just because it's going through a lot more material, but no matter what angle you look at it, it still seems like just a lot darker on the edge.
Right. So if you do slot together furniture, like you would see with like plywood on a CNC, but if you do that with the plexiglass or acrylic, the edges show up darker, like darker blue than the faces. So yeah, it almost looks like this like Tron style design. I posted the coffee maker on my Instagram, Chris, if you want to see it.
Yeah, go check right now.
But I drew up that little coffee maker in 6 minutes and just made squares and rectangles, and I had grid snaps on set to 1/8 of an inch because that's how thick the plexi was. So I just made squares and stretched them on grid snaps, 6 minutes. And then the cut time was about 8 to 12 minutes to cut out all the pieces. And from there, it was done. So it was literally, once the machine was set up, under 20 minutes to make that. So it's a really viable thing for making products. Now, I think you could do a lot of cool stuff with lighting. I think you could make really cool kind of drawer organizers, all sorts of things. But yeah, I think it's one of those things that like Mike and I will probably have like a weekend where we're like watching the fights and messing around with it at like the same time. Because every time I've done anything with epoxy or acrylic, the finishing time and just like fixing mistakes is so brutal. With this, the acrylic comes with like the paper on it that you peel off after you cut it. Yeah. So everything's protected. The cuts are perfectly clean and require no finishing. And then you slot together and you're done.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks really clean. I'm looking at it right now on your Instagram post.
I really dig the idea of using the colored plexiglass rather than just clear because, well, the floating bed that you made out of the clear glass was really cool. But what I was going to say is the clear is always like utility driven. Right. It seems like I also see John Malecki use plexiglass in some of his floating tables to make it kind of defy gravity a little bit. But this is the opposite of instead of using the acrylic to be invisible, this is embracing it and just completely using it as a new material. Yeah. So
I also think it'd be really good for making like small router jigs and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can see through it. So like lining it up, like if you wanted to like make your logo that you like route into something, if you had like a non-complex one, if it was a clear piece of acrylic, like 1/4-inch thick to catch the ball bearing on like a flush trim bit or something, you could kind of see through it when you're placing the thing. The other thing that I really liked about this laser cutter, and I think it's something that Glowforge probably like pushed forward, is the onboard camera. So I drew it in Illustrator. You can import as an SVG or a DXF. And then it has a camera on the bed of the laser cutter. So when you put in the material, you can line up your digital file right over the actual size of the material.
Boom. That's pretty cool.
So if you're doing like an engraving on something, it's like all set up. So shout out to Make Blocks. They've been emailing me every single day asking me when I'm going to do the video. So it'll probably be out pretty soon because they are persistent people.
Nice.
Maybe laser people are just, they got it out for content creators.
Now, they were really nice. Like, they didn't ask, like, they didn't have demands. They kind of realized the value that we potentially bring and just wanted to get things out as quickly as possible. So they were good to work with. I think David Picciuto's worked with them and a few other people in the maker community, but real, real solid machine. Out of the box to set up and get it working was probably like an hour.
Nice.
Okay, so does that mean the new laser is your obsession this week? Is that your hashtag current obsession?
Obsession? I think I haven't really seen any media. Yeah.
Sure. That's it. There it is.
Booyah. I like it. Chris, do you have any new obsessions? Are you checking anything new out?
You know what? So actually, this will kind of tie in, but there's 2 weeks left in the Rockler Hobby Challenge. So if you're either working on something or even honestly, if you haven't started on anything and you got an idea, like all you have to do to enter is build it and use the hashtag on Instagram and you're entered. So 2 weeks is still plenty of time to get a project done, especially, you know, everyone's got a couple days off coming up here. Just ignore your family and build something, get it in at the 11th hour. But as you guys remember, so for my challenge, I built the sim racing rig. So last week I hooked up for the first time my VR, I have the PlayStation like VR headset. So I got to do that sitting in the rig with the steering wheel and everything. Dude, it is like, especially if you get in like an F1 car or something so that, you know, you're not like in a cockpit, you can kind of like see all around you. It's crazy. Yeah. Like it is so much fun and so immersive. And then you get these headphones on too. You switch out the little like kind of cheap ones that come with the VR headsets. And now you got that sound immersion too. I love it. My buddy Chris and Sean, they both got sick doing it. Yeah, it's like too much. Like it makes them too dizzy or whatever. But dude, if it doesn't give you that like seasick feeling, it's fun.
That's so cool. Yeah, because you don't even see the fact that you're in a rig.
Yeah, you're just, dang, you got that steering wheel in hand. I hooked up the stick shift to it now also.
Do you find yourself like really leaning into corners? Like even though it's not actually going to push you, it's like you still like brace your body for it?
A little bit. So I don't personally get that like seasick feeling from it. I'm fine. I can do it. They both get it immediately. But the one time that I kind of feel like what they're getting about, it doesn't make me feel sick. It's just like, oh yeah, that's a weird sensation, is anytime you are going either up or down or like leaning, you really notice it. Or for me, actually, especially if I crash and then I have to reverse out of it, reversing feels really weird to me. Cause like your body wants to feel a momentum or a G-force. It wants to feel something, but it doesn't. And so like what you're feeling in your brain are just like at odds with each other.
Dang. Okay. Well, that's pretty cool.
But it's fun. It's fun.
Have you ever seen those videos of people putting on VR goggles for the first time?
Yeah.
And like the classic is it's, or it's like the one that I always see is it'll be the top of a skyscraper and then there's a plank with a cat out on the end.
Yeah.
And to the whole idea of it being immersive, it really is.
It feels like it's a lot of dads and moms taking spills with VR goggles on for the first time. Yeah.
Oh man.
Actually, luckily you're sitting down.
Which has taken more boomers, the Segway, like the hoverboard, or VR goggles?
I got a quick world obsession that was good. I went to a Warriors game.
Oh, awesome, man.
Coolest stadium, coolest basketball arena I've ever been in.
It's like brand new, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's mostly underground. So when you walk in, you walk into kind of like the middle of it. So they really like... And the way they did the luxury boxes and stuff like that is just genius. They basically figured out like how to use the space underneath like the terrace seating that goes up. And they created luxury boxes that are low to the floor that are like, you know, five, like rows, like 4 to 10 up from the floor.
Okay.
Behind them is a luxury box that's underneath like rows 10 to 20. So they can rent this like space. So there's like a bar with like private chefs and restaurants behind these seatings that are pretty low to the floor. So I went to the game, saw Dave Chappelle. He was like, boom, happened to be there. Like Steph Curry in person, just ridiculous. Like Everyone else looks like they're trying really hard. He just looks like he's playing pickup basketball, like zero nerves. Like it's, I think he's just, I don't know if he takes any like beta blockers or something, but he just looks more comfortable playing basketball than anyone else on the floor. Granted, they played the Pelicans without Zion and they're pretty terrible, but, and they won by like 40. So
yeah,
if you're in San Francisco and you're a basketball fan, check out the arena. It's a really cool arena.
Cool. So they got basically like floor level boxes.
Yeah.
Do they also have the between second and third tier? Do they have them there too?
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. So they got double boxes.
Also, best food at a sporting event that I've been to, which is not surprising. Like San Francisco is kind of fancy. They have like a wine bar and like we were getting like full on cocktails. We were getting like old fashions.
They've got the Apple store inside of the arena.
So,
all right, that's awesome. I'm going to actually give a shout out for my current obsession. I also want to shout out a couple hobby challenge projects, but this is not that. This is Brad from Fix This, Build That.
Love Brad.
This past week, he put out a DIY floating shelves with built-in lighting. But the twist on the lighting is, how do I explain it the best way?
Wireless?
They have a it's wireless. There we go. It's wireless charging. But the idea is like you would have floating shelves above your desk. So you would have an easy way of just like getting access to charging them, but you just don't want that visible cable all the time. And so what he did is use LED strips and then one of those cell phone recharging packs, basically, and then integrated those two together to where it's just one cable to plug them in. It's got a kill switch so that it doesn't like quiet draw when it's not in use. It was just a really clean video. And outside of that, they just look like really good floating shelves. So shout out to Brad because he just always takes things one step past where they need to be, but does it the right way. Whether it's like tool storage or something like this, he always adds some kind of functionality, but just does it like very, very super pro. So big ups.
Yeah, Brad's the man.
And then I'm going to go ahead and start us off. I don't know if everybody's going to shout out a Rock or Hobby challenge, but I am going to shout out at PC Makes. I think there's a really good example of the project because the build is not overkill. It's necessity driven, I'm sure, utility driven at least. But a lot of the times, if you're going to build something like this and it's not a part of this challenge or something similar, you're going to make it as basic as possible and it's not going to necessarily look cool. So what Patrick Clancy built, PC Makes, is a dirt bike stand out of plywood, but he didn't just slap it together out of scrap wood like what you would imagine. He did a lot of patterned end grain, essentially, so that there's all these stripes and clean joinery making, you know, like a dirt bike stand out of wood, but it's cooler than one that you would just have out of the box built out of metal. So I think that's a big shout out. It's not too big of a project, but it's perfect because it's all about the other hobby, which is riding bikes.
Boom. I'm going to give a real quick one too. It's UCN_UCN. It's not really woodworking, but I mean, I've done quite a few Star Wars projects and I like doing a little bit of upcycling here and there. This guy is like creating this like wall art. That's like he full on made a Millennium Falcon to go on to match the kind of Star Destroyer that he made before out of an old TV. And this guy's just like taking junk and like putting it all together. I don't know how. I hope he makes like a YouTube video. Yeah, UCN_UCN. And I think he's one of our, I think if I remember correctly, he actually lives in Singapore and listens to the podcast. So shout out to our friends from around the world.
I think that's really cool. And he basically turned them, or their wall art, but they have their backlit. So they kind of have this sconce kind of quality to them. But I think it's cool. So he built the Millennium Falcon out of like electronic parts.
Yeah.
And that has such a vintage Star Wars aesthetic anyways. Like that's exactly like what Tatooine looks like, you know? So that's so cool.
Yeah. It's like, it's that was the aesthetic and he nailed it.
Yeah. I feel like they even maybe talked about like in how they made the like the models that are in the movies, like they just got a bunch of like bolts and screws and stuff and just went and threw it, and that's like, and then covered all in gray, and that's the surface of all those ships when you see them in the movies.
Huh, that's cool.
I don't know if true or not.
Well, everybody, we appreciate you listening. We appreciate all the submissions to the hashtag Rockler Hobby Challenge. Still plenty of time to submit and we will shout you out next episode. If you have topics, ideas, or questions you think we should talk about on the show, you can find us on Instagram. I am at Modern Builds, Chris is at Four Eyes Furniture, and Ben is at Benjamin Ueda. Keep it real, everybody. Stay safe out there, and we will see you next time on the Modern Maker Podcast. Bye.
Later.
Bye.